listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm happy to have John Rubino with me once again. John runs the popular financial website, dollarcollapse.com, and he's co-authored a book with James Turk, and he's written some books on his own as well. He's a professional financial analyst, really an equity analyst. He's traded the bond market in the past when he was in Wall Street. Now he's decided to, well, I don't know if he takes life easy. I think he works very hard, but he lives in a part of the world which I would love to live in. That's Idaho. And but thanks to modern communication, we can talk to John. Thanks for being with us again, John.
Hey, Jay. Good to be back.
Always good to have you on this show because, well, first of all, you speak well, and it's always you're easy to understand, and your thoughts are coherent and they're well organized. So that helps me as a as a host. I saw an article at dollarcollapse.com that claimed that the past 10 years have been about as bad as the 1930s. As measured by GDP. In fact, I think the author suggested they were even worse. But then, as it turns out, I guess maybe he wasn't quite correct because he was using or making some assumptions about the data that he was using that wasn't quite correct, or the data, I don't know exactly what, but it turns out maybe not quite correct, but not completely off the wall either. Could you comment on that article?
Sure. The author of that article basically took the average growth for each year in the 1930s, compared it to the average growth for each year in the past 10 here, and got the same number. In other words, the economy, the U.S. economy right now is growing as slowly as it did during the Great Depression. Uh-huh. And there are some issues with taking a compounding data series and making an average out of it.
Right.
So that that doesn't give you a completely accurate picture. And in fact, on a compounded basis, we're growing a little faster in terms of reported numbers than we did during the Depression, but not much faster. It's still incredibly subpar. You know, it's 1 point something versus really what we need to be a 3% a year growth in order to stop the increase of debt to GDP. In other words, until we grow at historically normal rates for the post-World War II era, we're digging ourselves more deeply into a financial hole year after year. So the point of that article is still valid, even if the math was a little off, which is that that something has changed in the past decade to make it harder and harder for us to grow at rates which we would consider normal and optimal. And what has changed, obviously, is all the debt we took on prior to this decade. You know, we leveraged ourselves to the hilt between 1971 and the 2000s. And when you borrow huge amounts of money, it makes everything else harder. Whether you're an individual or a country, it works the same way. Your debts act as a headwind. Mm-hmm. And it makes it harder to grow going forward, especially if your growth requires new debt. You know, if we have to talk consumers into borrowing more money now, mm-hmm. that's a tough sell because most consumers are already, you know, borrowed to the max. Right. Same thing with corporations. They now have record amounts of debt. Same thing with governments at basically every level of American, European, and mostly Asian society. Everybody's already fully leveraged. So we can't get people to leverage themselves further very easily. In other words, we can't get credit to be created for productive uses anymore. Therefore, we don't grow very quickly. And mm-hmm. our debts continue to mount. So what we're having, what's happening right now is that debt to GDP everywhere in the world is rising, in some places at an accelerating rate, which means we're creating the conditions for some kind of a gigantic financial crisis out there. You know, if you, to go back to the 1930s example, if you look at the amount of debt that the U.S. carried going into the 1930s and compare it to the amount of debt that we have today, there is no comparison. We mm-hmm. are vastly more leveraged now than we were during the Roaring Twenties. And the stock market crash and subsequent depression, you know, that followed the stock market crash during the 1930s, we should expect something of a commensurately higher magnitude going forward. We don't know what it's going to be. It could be a hyperinflation where we basically just have to cut the value of the dollar and the euro in the end by 3/4 in order to get out from under these debts, or some kind of a huge crash where we wipe out our debts via default. In other words, everybody goes bankrupt and their debts disappear, but at a huge cost in human misery. So one of those things is increasingly likely as our debts mount. Mm-hmm. We can't know for sure which one it'll be because we don't know what decisions the governments of the world are going to make in response to the rising amplitude of the booms and busts. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's possible that this boom is the last boom, and the bust that flows from it inevitably is going to be the final bust in the cycle that began after World War II, and that really gained traction in 1971 when we took the world off the gold standard. You know, mm-hmm. that world, fiat currency and fractional reserve banking, is going to end at some point because it's clearly dysfunctional. It clearly results in accelerating leverage, which has to blow up on us at some point. So right. When that system ends, Jay, that's really the end of an era, because that's what we've known for all of our lives and everyone's adult life and the entire lives of most people who've been, you know, who are around now. And when that changes, it's not clear what we create in its place, but it'll have to be very different from what we have today.
Well, John, you're a little bit younger than me, but I was a young man, quite a young man, when we went off the gold standard. I suspect you were probably in grade school somewhere. So maybe you weren't even that old. No, you weren't even that old.
high school.
So what you just said isn't. What you just said isn't quite true. I mean, I can remember before there were credit cards. Essentially, I remember when the first credit cards came out was to buy Getty gas or something like that. And people were averse to borrowing money. That was before Nixon took us off the gold standard in 71, before the banking system could expand infinitely. But I want to go back to ask you, you sort of seem to emphasize reported growth. And the reason I ask, I want to bring that up, and it also touches on this inflation-deflation issue, the two scenarios that you just painted. You know, we had John Williams on this show last week, and I want to talk to you also, I want you to talk to us, rather, about you have something you put, I think, on your website at Dollar Collapse, I think is absolutely excellent. If people want to go to pick up some excellent videos, you know, 10, 15-minute type things that will really give you some insights. John, you do a great job of picking up a lot of different things, and one was with Mr. Dent, and he's a real deflationist. I mean, he is talking about, he's talking about the price of gold going to 600. He's talking about, well, and he's really looking at mostly at the demographic curves and so forth. And certainly, there's some truth to that. And he believes, and he agrees with John Williams, who is a hyperinflationist, that the economy is in tough shape because of debt. Well, and partly because of debt. He probably puts more emphasis on the demographics. But nonetheless, both agree that we're in big trouble. Williams sees hyperinflation because he sees the dollar being, confidence being lost in the dollar, people getting rid of their dollars and buying stuff in exchange for, you know, for the dollar. Whereas I don't think Dent sees that. Which do you think is more likely, John?
Well, I first of all, I think Harry Dent's take on this is historically really interesting, because demographics does have a huge impact on a country's economy. In other words, how many old people there are, how many young people there are, what the trends are and everything. And in the U.S., we're aging very dramatically. You know, the number of people over 65 is going to double by 2050 to nearly a quarter of the population. And so mm-hmm. Harry Dent looks at this and says, well, what do old people do? They sell their houses and downsize. They mm-hmm. sell their stocks in order to pay their bills. And what does that do to the financial markets? It causes a bear market in stocks. It causes housing prices to collapse and causes the economy to slow down. So there's your depression, you know, and that makes a lot of sense intuitively and historically. But I think he's leaving one thing out, which is that for the first time in history, all the world's governments are armed with unlimited printing presses.
Uh-huh.
Which means they can create as much new currency as they want to lean against this demographic trend. And they've already proven that they have no problem doing that. So probably what will happen if, let's say baby boomers, you know, our generation does what we're supposed to do. We start selling our houses and our stocks and everything, and that puts downward pressure on asset prices. The governments of the world can just create new money out of thin air and buy those assets if they want to. You know, the government can decide what the value of its currency is. Literally, because it's got money that's just make-believe. If they want the mm-hmm. dollar to be half as valuable as it is today, they can just decree that by mm-hmm. creating 50 trillion new dollars and just dumping it out into the system. And mm-hmm. I think governments will respond that way because the alternative is an instant depression, mm-hmm. which means they'll get blamed for that. Mm-hmm. But if they can push off that inevitability by 5 years by printing a lot of new currency, that means they get to retire and their successors get blamed for it. So human nature being what it is, governments will always choose the inflationary course. And these guys are armed with the ultimate inflationary weapon right now, mm-hmm. Which means they'll use it. They will destroy the value of their currencies in order to protect their own careers. Or mm-hmm. if they're idealists and delusional at the same time, they'll do it to protect their constituents, thinking that they're doing a good thing. But they won't be doing a good thing. They'll be hurting their constituents in the long run in order to avoid a little pain in the short run. But however it works out, I think that some kind of a massive currency crisis is the inevitable result of what we're doing right now, in which the major currencies of the world are devalued dramatically in terms of real stuff like gold and silver and farmland and possibly some of the cryptocurrencies. That's a new interesting twist on the current economic situation that I don't think is very well understood. I certainly don't understand it.
Well,
but
John,
I think it's a wild card.
Yeah, that leads me to one of the videos that I saw on your website last week. I mean, again, folks, John puts up every week his top 10 video picks. And he goes through and finds some very interesting and relevant videos. From this one was titled, Ethereum is Just Exploding, Is Gold Next? Was the title of the video. And, you know, we're seeing an amazing rise in the price of Bitcoin and Ethereum and others as well, John. I was amazed. I saw the list, a huge list of these cryptocurrencies that have sprung up. Bitcoin was $2,735. Ethereum was at $387. I mean, Ethereum was, I don't know, it was, you know, $20, $30, $40 not long ago, something like that. So what do you make of this? Is this, you know, and then I noticed, here's another interesting article I picked up today. Putin meets with Ethereum founder to create national virtual currency. I thought the Russians and the Chinese and those countries that are considered adversaries of the United States were building up their gold reserves in order to protect themselves against the United States, against NATO, against the powers that use the dollar, and to try to create their own currency so they're not beholden to the dollar or being slaves of the dollar. But what do you make of this?
Well, the cryptocurrencies, let's take Bitcoin as the main example, but it's only about 40% of the total cryptocurrency market now. There's a lot of other ones out there, but mm-hmm. but Bitcoin is a superior transaction mechanism to the current way banking is done. You know, if you want to send some money via your bank, it goes from your bank to another bank to a clearing house to another bank, and it might take several days. Well, Bitcoin is instantaneous. In theory, you know, when the system is working the way it should. And it's largely anonymous. And the supply of Bitcoin is limited, which means its value should be stable over time. Put that all together, and it's a vastly superior system of transaction than the current way of doing things. So it's a new technology that is that's possibly displacing the old transactional technology of the world. In that sense, it's very important and a very interesting change that's happening out there. But cryptocurrencies aren't stores of value necessarily because they exist virtually. Mostly they're on a computer network somewhere.
Right.
And they can be hacked. The system can be shut down. You know, the whole EMP attack scenario would make cryptocurrencies valueless because the network on which they exist would go down. So they aren't a store of value in the way that gold is. Now, I think ultimately where we end up is with a monetary system that uses gold as the base money and which individuals use as a store of value. In other words, physical gold stored in a safe place is your risk-free, the risk-free component of your portfolio, the cash money. Mm-hmm. And a cryptocurrency that is maybe linked to your gold account or maybe exists independently in some other way, that's how you transact. And there's constantly, you know, value flowing back and forth between your gold account and your cryptocurrency account, which sounds an awful lot like the gold money system that's being
set
up.
Yes, indeed.
And so I think there's definitely a place for monetary metals in the new world of crypto money, you know, and I'm not sure exactly how it plays out, but I think, you know, intuitively, you got to have something that exists physically, which can't be wiped out by a computer crash or by hackers or whatever, because those are huge threats right now. But you also need something that's easy to transact. You need a global PayPal, basically, where you click send and the money's over in the other account with no trouble. And that is what Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies promise.
Mm-hmm. So if you could attach some value, some intrinsic value to that unit of cryptocurrency, I was just thinking in terms, I believe the Russians and the Chinese and various other countries that are sort of aligned with those two giants are looking at using gold more frequently or as part of their currency. They're using it, as I understand it, Turkey and some of the other countries in that bloc kind of using it as a gold as a currency. So as I've had explained to me, cryptocurrencies are more like a good transportation network or a means of transporting wealth, maybe such that governments can't really see what's going on in some cases. I mean, people in China trying to get their money out of China when the Chinese government is trying to keep it there. That sort of thing going on, you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. The countries you mentioned are buying lots of gold at an accelerating rate. At the same time, they're looking at cryptocurrencies as maybe an alternative to their current transaction mechanism. And it's possible that that is their long-term plan, too. You know, a gold-based cryptocurrency system where the blockchain is the transfer mechanism for value and gold sitting in vaults is the base money of the system. And that could be what they're thinking about implementing at some point in the future. You know, they're exploring it now, and I have no idea what their time frame is, but they are looking at those two things at the same time, so it's interesting. But again, this is this is brand new, uncharted territory here, because we don't know how other governments are going to react when their currencies are threatened by cryptocurrencies. What will they do? Will they regulate them out of existence somehow? Mm-hmm. Will they make them illegal? You know, we just can't know at this point, because it's human decision-making under pressure in the future, which is inherently unknowable. We just don't know what these guys sitting around a conference table with a crisis going on are going to decide to do. But you can bet that they'll do something.
They'll do something to try to protect their own interest as they see it, first and foremost. Well, John, just a couple other ideas here I wanted to pass by you. Another wonderful video. Grant Williams, the pension crisis is the biggest macro story. And certainly I think it's one that we're going to hear. We're starting to hear about it already. But then I go back to a statistic I picked up from Simon Mikhailovich in an article I read earlier today. He's at the Tocqueville Bullion Reserve. And he says, with the global debt to GDP ratio now at 320% and the cost of average debt service at 2%, it takes 6.4% growth per annum just to service the debt. Not happening. I mean, that's an amazing statistic if that's correct. John, we're in big trouble. We're beyond the point of no return. There's nobody going to, maybe China can make it, maybe, if you believe their statistics, they can grow at 6%. But no one else can. I mean, who else can grow at 6.4% because of all the malinvestment, the debt, everything else? So,
it's. Yeah, well, Jay, the pensions could be the thing that blows up first, you know, because they are amazingly underfunded. And, you know, Illinois just got its bond rating moved down to one notch above junk, and their interest costs are going up, which means they can't borrow money, but they also can't balance their budget. So that might be the system that blows up and sends the rest of the system into crisis. It could be very easily the pension funds that are the catalyst for the next big blow up.
Yeah, and the next big blow up could take gold to much higher levels. As a matter of fact, I think that same video that you pointed out, Ethereum Breaks $300 is the title. And in there, they talked about how Andrew McGuire is saying that gold is the next to take off. Well, who knows? Andrew McGuire has been bullish for a long time, and you know, we'll see. Eventually, I think he'll be right. But it really is really interesting times now, John, right?
Fascinating times, Jay. You know, interesting in the Chinese curse sense for a lot of people. You know, if you're on the wrong side of this, your life is going to get very hard very fast when this really starts to get going. So that's where precious metals come in. They protect you from a lot of the craziness that is definitely coming.
All right. We're going to have to leave it go at that, John. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. It's always good to have you. Next week, folks, Frank Holmes is going to be with me, and he's starting a new gold ETF, but using a very unique approach to picking stocks for that fund. So it should be very interesting. I hope you'll join me next week. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Dynacert is a global leader in carbon emission reduction technologies. Created for use in diesel engines, the hydrogen unit has been proven to reduce carbon emissions by up to 40%, increase torque, improve engine oil quality, and provide up to 19% in fuel savings. Our leading-edge technology is designed for tractor trailers, rail, marine, and newly developed for diesel engine cars. Reducing the amount of greenhouse gases provides benefits to the environment, to communities and businesses, and to our shareholders.
Tri-Metals Mining is a growth-focused mineral exploration company exploring and developing its near-surface Gold Springs gold-silver project in mining-friendly Nevada and Utah. Tri-Metals has only drilled less than 10% of the gold targets at Gold Springs, and it already has a gold resource with a robust preliminary economic assessment. Tri-Metals believes that with further drilling, there is a significant potential to discover 3 to 5 million ounces of gold at Gold Springs. Tri-Metals shares are listed on the OTCQX and the TSX under symbols TMIAF and TMI respectively, and its website is trimetalsmining.com.